Welcome back to Uprising. The overwhelming majority of pornography consumers are men. They are motivated by constructions of sexuality for which they have been socialized. Dominant constructions of sexuality associate masculinity with both misogyny and aggression. That's a quote from an article by Stan Goff, my next guest. Stan Goff is author of Full Spectrum Disorder, The Military in the New American Century, also Hideous Dream, and his forthcoming book is Sex and War, About Gender and the Military. He has been interviewed many times on Pacifica about the issues of war and the military, but rarely on issues of pornography. Stan Goff, welcome to Uprising.
Thanks for having me on. And I wouldn't say rarely. I would say this is probably the first time.
Really? Okay, I was being generous. This is an issue that progressives tend to not touch, and I want to talk a lot about that this morning. But first, your book, Sex and War, About Gender and the Military, everybody knows that pornography is used heavily in the military. Is it any more heavily used among men in the military than it is among the general public, men in the general public?
Yeah, I think there's a demographic question that's underneath all that. I mean, I don't think the links between pornography and militarism are really the link between pornography and patriarchy and militarism and patriarchy. I think it's important to keep our eye on the system in this. And male soldiers use pornography exactly the same way that other men use pornography. They use it to become titillated, and when they're alone, they use it as an aid to masturbate. So the connection between pornography and militarism and pornography and military populations is really a connection that's concentrated because the military are largely young and largely male, so it's like a perfect market demographic for pornography. But the real connection, I think, is a lot deeper, and that's where we have to examine the content of pornography, which is, again, it reinforces these social expectations that are associated with biological males and females, and those are, masculinity and femininity, which are complementary, and that is, they're defined against one another, like up is defined against down. And I think the erotic dimensions of masculinity and femininity are not restricted solely to overt sexual behavior, but, they condition every aspect of our lives every day. We walk a certain way, we dress a certain way, we relate in conversation a certain way because we are male, because we are female, because of those social expectations. And it's this association of male sexuality with aggression and violence, and then the complementary association of female sexuality with receptivity and masochism that binds pornography and militarism, not in an abstract way, but in the context of an actually existing male system of power.
So you would say that the use of pornography in the military encourages the aggression that is then acted out on the battlefield?
Well, I'm not sure that you can prove a direct linear causal connection. But between porn consumption and aggression in the military, the construction is not linear that way. The sex itself is constructed as aggression for males. And in the military, pornography is a prop and it's a kind of sustaining nutrient as it is in the general society. And sex as aggression is sort of a reflection of the whole social system in which men dominate and exploit women in every dimension, social, economic, and cultural. I think we have to understand that the military is a place where that male-identified aggression is considered a necessity to accomplish its mission, which is to violate, to subjugate foreigners by armed force. And we see the way, that gender enters into the way detainees in Abu Ghraib were feminized as part of breaking them down for interrogation.
That's an important point that I was about to go to next. The photographs from Abu Ghraib and other U.S.-run military prisons are in so many ways reminiscent of the kind of sadism that is seen in contemporary pornography, particularly these days as pornography has become more and more hardcore hardcore, if you will, as it's called. And do you think that there can be direct links made between the abuse seen at Abu Ghraib and the use of pornography in the military?
Again, I don't think the link is direct. I think we have to see it in the context of the whole system. And pornography becomes sort of this powerful, it's an ideological transmission belt of patriarchal values and of these constructions of masculinity as aggression. Even though, you know, we've seen how many females were involved in this, we have to remember that there are only 15% of the military and there are women who are trying to make it in a male environment. And so, you know, they felt obliged to be more males than males. And I think we also have to look closely at the what seems to be a very unhealthy and codependent relationship between someone like Lindy England and Charles Grainer, who was also an abusive prison guard in a civilian prison before he was activated to go to Iraq. So, I mean, it's I think it was Julie Eisenstein that said that women like this become gender decoys. And because they, you know, what we're still seeing in the final effect is we're seeing the feminization of this dark foreigner as part of the process of dehumanizing them and objectifying them in exactly the same way that we objectify women in pornography.
I want to talk a little bit about the issue of how men can resist pornography and prostitution. We made the links between the two industries in the earlier segment. And as a man, it's, you know, how do you speak to other men? It is not common for progressive men to come out and even talk about these issues. I can count them on one hand, in fact. How do you talk, or how would you talk to men about these issues?
Well, I've been talking. and, you know, part of the problem is, and I don't think we, there's, you know, I don't think it's realistic to think that we're going to, in the short term, win the vast majority of men over to our point of view on this, because just getting to where we are now really requires, you know, some interpretive tools that aren't widely available, and people are sort of living in this, you know, this bombardment of patriarchal and capitalist propaganda. It's important to remember that pornography is not just a manifestation of patriarchy, but it's also capitalism. This is a $53 billion industry. I think, you know, and this is not to be overly voluntaristic, but I think that men need to, aside from not participating in that industry, that men on the left in particular, and I've lost some of my support among men on the left because of my position on this, but that's to be expected. I think, first of all, we have to engage with the body of feminist work, both academic and non-academic, that's already out there. And I think, you know, on the left, we have some insights that are very important. You know, fetishization is very important to the way that we do, you know, examinations of political economy. But, you know, we haven't recognized how desire itself is fetishized. And so we tend to treat sexual desire as if it's some sort of an ahistorical problem. You know, it's a drive that's utterly unconditioned by socialization. And no one on the left would ever accept any such analysis, you know, of consumerism as a form of economic desire. You know, we'd instantly see how this desire is constructed by social conditions, by systems of power. So I think the first step for socially and politically conscious men, at least it seems to me, is for us to interrogate those things in other people that we ourselves find sexually attractive. We have to interrogate our own experience of desire and exercise a willingness to be critical about that and to seek out the sources of that desire in our own socialization, in our own personal and social histories, and see how these things articulate themselves into both patriarchy and capitalism, not as, you know, not as moral failures, but as systems, as social systems of power.
I'm speaking with Stan Goff. He is the author of Full Spectrum Disorder, The Military in the New American Century, also Hideous Dream, and his forthcoming book is called Sex and War, About Gender and the Military. We'll be joined a little bit in a few minutes by Anne Simonton, who's the coordinator of Media Watch, to talk about progressives and pornography. But I want to ask you about the interesting exchange that took place, I believe it was on Alternet between Ching Sun. She put out an article that we spoke with Professor Ching Sun yesterday, to which Nina Hartley, who is a woman who is part of the sex industry and who calls herself a feminist for porn, Nina Hartley responded to Ching Sun, and then you responded to Nina Hartley, and I want to...
this dark foreigner as part of the process of dehumanizing them and objectifying them in exactly the same way that we objectify women in pornography.
Professor Ching Sun's report of her visit this past January to the Adult Entertainment Expo in Las Vegas, I couldn't help wondering if the author had done any prior research whatsoever into the active 20-year debate among women over the impact of pornography on their individual lives and their status as a gender. There's nothing new in her indignation, nothing fresh in her insights, and nothing unfamiliar in her arguments. As a sex worker and sex worker advocate for over two decades, I've heard it and read it all before. And then she talks about Professor Sun's criticisms of pornography, though jazzed up with some contemporary media theory, are a little different from those posed by the first round of anti-sex feminists. And she goes on to imply that obviously the violent stuff is bad. You responded to Nina Hartley, and the title of your article was Wrapping Profit in the Flag. Can you explain for our listeners what your main argument was to Nina Hartley?
Well, I mean, anybody who is listening closely, of course, you have to see what Dr. Sun's article said in the first place, because I have a quote from Dr. Sun right here. It says, and this is the fourth paragraph of her article. It said, the conservative forces typically want sexuality.
Can you repeat that? We're having actually some trouble with our phone line. Just start the quote.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. She says, the conservative forces typically want to control sexuality and are willing to use antiquated and potentially repressive obscenity statutes to do it. The pornographers want to derail any criticism of the often blatant misogyny of their product, and are willing to wrap themselves in political principles to do that. So this is really the core of Ching Sun's argument. And then what Hartley did was came in and completely substituted a new argument for it, and then, as a straw man, and then tore it down because they didn't want to deal it. And this is what I'm finding is a very typical and sort of concerted response by a core of porn advocates who are out there on the Internet, acting almost as trolls. To attack anybody who has any critique of pornography. And what they do is they substitute arguments for ours. And if you just listen to what Hartley just said about Sun's argument, the first thing she said, well, it's passé. I've heard it all before. She hasn't done her homework, and what that meant was that she hadn't read a list of, so-called authorities who just happened to be porn apologists and entrepreneurs. Okay, there's a recitation of Nina Hartley's credentials, and there were appeals to authority, false analogies. I mean, there was this list of, if you look at them closely, just plain old-fashioned logical fallacies.
On one hand, in fact, how do you talk, or how would you talk to men about these issues?
Well, I've been talking. And part of the problem, Phyllis Schlafly, Anita Bryant, Beverly LaHaye, Judith Reisman, Jerry Falwell. I mean, it was bizarre. And, I mean, this idiocy went on to the whole article, and not a single point made by Dr. Sun was ever directly addressed or rebutted.
And, of course, it was it was published by counterpunch.org, which you then responded to. And I think one of the important points that you made that I think is really, really, really crucial is that the way in which pornography has, the direction it has gone in today, it is almost difficult to find pornography that is not violent and degrading.
Or suggestive of stereotypes, and even though it may not be overtly violent, it's reinforcing of stereotypes and objectification related to women. The vast majority of this stuff, and And again, it's not just, we don't have to just see it in one dimension. Though the content is important, it's also important to see this as an industry and how it impacts on people.
I want to actually bring Anne Simonton into this conversation. Anne Simonton is with, she's the coordinator of Media Watch. Anne, welcome to Uprising, and thank you for your patience.
Thanks, Anali.
You've talked to a number of men on the left, progressive men who have condoned pornography by appearing in Hustler magazine. And I should say that I left messages yesterday for Greg Palast, Mickey Z, and one other who I can't remember right now, and asked them if, and Christian Parenti, that was it, and asked them if they would be on the interview to justify their appearing in Hustler magazine. I only got a response from Mickey Z, who said that he couldn't make it. But you've actually interviewed a number of these men. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I started out by calling Dennis Moynihan from Democracy Now! Because of Amy Goodman's name on the cover of the July issue of Hustler magazine, and also the reprinting of an article that she did in that magazine. And then I also spoke with Greg Palast. Greg Palast essentially said that when I challenged him, would he publish amid images of hate toward African Americans, Jews, or animals, you know, would he do that? Because I assumed that he doesn't care about women. And he said, he replied basically that essentially he already does publish in those places. He feels that the UK Guardian,
talking about a lot of essays from notforsale-book.org for Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day, a quote from D.A. Clark in her essay, Prostitution for Everyone, Feminism, Globalization.
They're hoping that people, as Greg Palast mentioned, he wants people to turn toward the light, that they could see through the foolishness, and that's why he publishes in Hustler magazine. I also spoke with Danny Schechter. This was in an email exchange. And he was very offended when I suggested, challenged essentially his status about publishing in Hustler with the response of essentially, I don't necessarily approve of Hustler magazine, but I want to get my message out. And he does stand for free speech or something like that, you know, so I challenged him about that. What I'm finding is that they don't really want to talk about it. They want to publish, and Danny Schechter actually mentioned that Fox News was as bad as Hustler, and that's why he publishes there, because he'd also get into Fox News. He also said that, and he's waiting for Time and Newsweek, you know. I mean, I can understand that the left has problems. I've worked in alternative media for decades now and have worked toward non-commercial media. And I can
remarkably difficult for feminists to make any progress on these issues. Obviously, one reason for that is that feminist activity has not changed the fundamentals of social power. Men still control decisive power blocks, such as the...
I was particularly interested in challenging Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan, who seem to be responsible for the Hustler interview being published. Because, as was mentioned in this program earlier, images, for example, in that particular issue included one called Home Wrecker, which was a series of a pictorial from Hustler that looked like a woman of color who was handcuffed to a wall. Her arms were upraised. She's naked, and except for shoes. And there's a man standing next to her in camouflage with what looks like a gun, but it's he's holding it like a gun, but it's really a jackhammer. And she is handcuffed to this wall of a house that's been destroyed. And I think when you really start to look at the images and you start to do some kind of analysis, you could start to see the connections. Because a few pages earlier in this July issue, where Amy Goodman was in this issue, it had images from Iraq of men holding their Hustler magazines that they were given for free. Mm-hmm. So there are, I think we can see direct connections.
Right.
And and the woman looked like she was...
...from D.A. Clark. And that is it for our two-part special on pornography and prostitutions and feminist resistance to it. We are going to attempt to get these two programs online. It's been a long-standing issue from about last year between one of our programmers, Aura Bogado, and Hustler Magazine after an email exchange last summer. Hustler Magazine began attacking Aura Bogado in their pages of their magazine with very, very degrading images of her, several articles in about three different issues. And Aura Bogado finally responded by publishing an article called Hustling the Left, which was published on Z Magazine a couple of months ago. And Bruce David, the editor of Hustler Magazine, responded. And in it, he describes how successful Aura Bogado was. He said, though puerile and misleading, her, meaning Aura Bogado's, attack was devastatingly effective. Almost immediately, Goodman's people informed us that there would be no further cooperation between their organization and ours. And Professor Noam Chomsky, a vocal social activist who we interviewed for the September 2005 issue, did likewise. And I had an email conversation with Professor Noam Chomsky about the issue. And of course, unfortunately, Professor Chomsky didn't even know what Hustler was. But once he found out, he said, and he has published this in his blog on Z Magazine, that he felt taken advantage of. I want to bring Stan Goff back into the conversation. This issue with all of the progressives that have been published in Hustler, including George Monbiot, I said Mickey Z, Christian Parenti, Helen Caldicott, etc. What do you think is the best response from progressive anti-porn advocates like yourself, particularly men? Do you think that you would have any success talking to people like Greg Palast?
I sure hope I would. You know, this is probably one of the most painful things about this. And I would also say that that Sister Bogado was repaid for this important article that she wrote that did change some relations with a concerted and coordinated internet attack on her that included all sorts of, you know, the typical, you know, allusions to sexual aggression, that that she needed to be subjected to sex by a violent porn performer. I mean, you know, very, very predictable. I think the comparison between Hustler and Fox is not an accurate comparison, saying we want to get our message out. And if that's all we're trying to do, then how far are we departing from our principles? I think the closer analogy is between Hustler and Southern Partisan. If images that are as overtly racist are a message that is overtly racist as it is in Southern Partisan, which is a magazine that's published by former Klansmen and sometimes current Klansmen, no one on the left would ever think of associating themselves in any way or legitimating a magazine that supported white supremacy. Why is it that we don't have the same hesitation about a magazine that becomes, again, an ideological organ for male supremacy? I mean, I think this tells you how far the male left has to go. And not just the male left, because I was very disappointed to hear that Amy Goodman, who I know and like and respect, was legitimating this magazine as well. And I think that comes from this sort of, you know, this libertarian impulse to say that, you know, we're defending free speech. And how Larry Flint became an icon for free speech is a complete mystery to me. You know, I think we've got to go beyond this notion that, you know, this sort of, and I think it's middle class, and I think it's abstract, and I think it's libertarian. It automatically puts a minus next to anything that the Christian right assigns a plus. I think that's very superficial. You know, they're going to defend pornography on free speech grounds, and then they fail to critique its misogynist content. This is exactly what Cheng Sun was saying. And it seems to be completely lost on both the libertarian left and on the left in general, which, by the way, is still dominated by males. I think we just have to be clear about that. That males on the left have not been willing to recognize how their own privilege as males, their own social privilege as males, informs and creates this sort of myopia around the issue of gender. And I think it's time that we start correcting that. So God, I hope it's possible.
I also want to mention that there's a website that has been compiling a lot of information around the Hustler issue, which actually takes its name from the article that Ara Bogato published, but Ara is not associated with the website. The website is hustlingtheleft.com, and it has on it the it has reprinted the article by Bruce David, editor of Hustler magazine, as well as Ara's article and a number of other pieces of information. And has actually reprinted some disturbing images. So, of course, we certainly recommend caution to our listeners when checking out that website. But it is a very comprehensive website. I want to bring Anne Simonton back into the conversation. At this point, how do you go forward? We talked about a number of issues, and certainly Amy Goodman's people and Noam Chomsky, for example, have backed off after Ara Bogato's article was published. Do you see this as a positive sign?
I'll see it as a positive sign, as I challenged Dennis Moynihan to include in their analysis a critique of pornography that includes the harm being done to women, the racism in these images, and also the pedophilia that is encouraged in these issues, or in magazines like Barely Legal that Larry Flint publishes. We need this analysis. We need to bring it into the critique of globalization and to see the sex industry as a growing, behemoth of a corporation that we need to challenge. We need to understand how it fits in. How can we stand by and allow this to go on when we, as progressive lefts, are so concerned with workers' rights? We're concerned with injustice everywhere. We're concerned with racism. We're concerned with all these, police abuse, and all these different things, but we draw the line when it comes to the sex industry. And it's time that we challenge it, and I think that Amy Goodman has done more harm than good with her interview with Larry Flint that she had last year right around this time before the election. She let him go on endlessly publishing, promoting his book that he had come out, and she was chortling along with him, and it was really a disturbing interview. And her way of balancing it was to bring on Susie Bright, who is a paid pornographer herself. She published
progressives and pornography. But I want to ask you about the interesting exchange that took place, I believe it was on Alternet between Ching.
But I think that, she came into it without even knowing who Susie Bright was. And I think that we need to have more dialogue, and we need to have more debate. And this conversation must continue is essentially how I see it. And I see Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Needs to step up to that to do more programs like you're doing with Uprising, for example.
Finally, Stan Goff, in the last couple of minutes that we have left, can you suggest some ways in which activists can move forward? And I think Anne raised some really important points about debate, but this is an issue that nobody touches on. And as you mentioned, today was the first interview you've given about the issue of pornography and progressives. And almost always when you are interviewed, it's about the war, which is, of course, extremely important.
Yeah, I mean, everybody loved me whenever I was the left's, green beret alpha male. As soon as I started critiquing gender as a system of social power, people became allergic. But I think I that's not true across the board. And in fact, in making this critique, I have seen some people shift and they become curious and begin the process of being critical about it themselves. So I think really in terms of what is to be done in the immediate future, I think this is a debate that has to take place very vigorously on the left first, because that's where the impetus for social change tends to come from. Feminists and leftists are natural allies. And the reason they've been in this no-fault divorce for so long, I think, is largely something that can be laid at the doorstep of the male leadership of the left. So I would ask them, in the same way that in the past they had to become self-critical about how they'd internalized racism and other things, you know, that they also have to become critical about how they're complicit in patriarchy as a system of unequal social power.
Well, I want to thank the two of you very much for joining us today. Anne Simonton is the coordinator of Media Watch, and we just heard from Stan Goff. His book that is going to be out near the end of 2005 is Sex and War, about gender and the military. By the way, Stan Goff is retired from the U.S. Army and a member of Veterans for Peace and Military Families Speak Out. He's also on the coordinating committee of Bring Them Home Now campaign, and his series on military issues called Military Matters is online at freedomroad.org. And the information that we've been talking about today is on hustlingtheleft.com. There's also a website on the book that we've been talking about, a lot of essays from notforsale-book.org for Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day. A quote from D.A. Clark in her essay, Prostitution for Everyone, Feminism, Globalization, and the Sex Industry. She said, the essential issues which traditionally inspired feminists to challenge and criticize the sex industry have not changed despite decades of effort. It has been remarkably difficult for feminists to make any progress on these issues. Obviously, one reason for that is that feminist activity has not changed the fundamentals of social power. Men still control decisive power blocks such as the armed forces, the higher levels of government, big business and media, and the sex industry is a service industry for men. That is Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day, a quote from D.A. Clark. And that is it for our two-part special on pornography and prostitutions and feminist resistance to it. We are going to attempt to get these two programs online in the near future. When we do, we will announce them on the air. Today's show was directed by Sana Zaidi and engineered by Mark Maxwell. Our website is uprisingradio.org. Our email is uprising@kpfk.org. You can order a CD of today and yesterday's program or any other program at pacificaradioarchives.org or 1-800-735-0230. Up next, the Community Calendar and Democracy Now! I'm your host and producer, Sonali Kolhatkar. Tune into Uprising tomorrow at 8 a.m. on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.